Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome again to Open Government Radio. Today is June 15th, 2010, and I'm your host, Steve Buckley. And for those who are listening, I just want to make sure that you can follow along much better with the conversation if you go to my blog for today's show, which is located at ustransparency.com. That's ustransparency, all one word, .com. There's links there for that we'll be covering for today's show. And if you go there, you will, of course, see that the subject, the topic for today's show is checking for culture change via MSPB surveys. And for those of you who are not familiar with MSPB, there's an explanation there about the Merit Systems Protection Board, the U.S. Merit Systems Protection Board, or MSPB. And if you, I won't read it all right there, but, I mean, but well, maybe I will. I just put down there that virtually everybody who's involved with open government agrees that culture change is necessary in order for President Obama's open government initiative to make federal departments and agencies more, quote, transparent, participatory, and collaborative. And so now that it's been a year and a half since the president launched that the Open Government Initiative, has there been any culture change? You know, none, a little, a lot, and how are we supposed to know? There's been an awful lot of hoopla, but that's not the same thing as objective measurement as far as whether things are actually changing or if it's just something that we're imagining is happening. The most obvious way to determine or measure culture change in any type of organization is to ask the people in that organization about the culture that they see inside their organization. And if you want to see any changes, of course, you would ask them over the course of time so that at some point in the future, come back and ask the same questions again, like it's basically a survey. And then you compare the results, and then you know what the trending is. So and in this case, if it has to do with culture change, you'd see if there is culture change and what kind of culture change that is, for better or for worse. So anyway, to help explore the fact that a lot of the these questions have been asked for years and years by the Merit System Protection Board, has been doing surveys of federal employees, asking them about their workplace, and some of those things touch on prohibited personnel practices. And there's a link there, but before you go shooting off to that, I want to introduce our guest, who is Dr. John Crum, and he's director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the U.S. Merit Systems Protection Board, or MSPB. And that is the part of MSPB that does these studies. So anyway, let's turn to Dr. Crum, or is it John? Which one? Can I call you John?
John is fine, Stephen.
Okay, great. Glad you could join us today. And I was just before the show, I was mentioning to you that I just saw a press release on the MSPB homepage about some studies that you have planned. But before, maybe jump ahead, if there's something that you want to go into about your office and your background and how you got into this, I should have gone into that first. I'm sorry. Getting a little ahead of myself here. So is there anything that you want to expand on about the Office? Is it the Office of Policy and Evaluation? Did I get that right?
You did. Very briefly, here at the Merit System Protection Board, we're an independent bipartisan agency. By that we mean we're headed by political appointees who do not serve at the will of the president, but in fact are appointed for staggered 7-year fixed terms. So they go beyond administrations, and they have to be from both political parties. That gives us the ability to look beyond what any current administration is and provide an overview perspective of, for instance, how the government is being managed, as well as adjudicate appeals of employees who have had adverse action taken against them. We do both of those missions. And again, we do it from sort of a bipartisan objective point of view that allows us to provide this sort of overview of personnel management policies as well as the actions that are taken against federal employees.
Mm-hmm. And so it comes out of the name Merit Systems. I mean, the whole idea is that if you work for the federal government as a U.S. government employee, that you should be judged on merit and not your connections through your in-laws or your political contributions or any other non-merit related thing. Is that
that's correct?
In a nutshell.
And in fact, for about the last 127 years, we've had a merit system in place. Prior to that, the civil service was staffed through a spoil system, in which basically incoming administration and president would name the members of the civil service based upon his own predilections. That all changed when President Garfield was assassinated by a person who was looking for a federal job. I did not get one, and basically got so upset that he assassinated the president. After that, there was the Pendleton Act of 1883, which established the first merit systems for the government, which are predicated on the idea that decisions should be based upon merit and that the public is best served by a workforce that is, in fact, governed by these issues of merit. Those principles were codified and reinforced in the Civil Service Reform Act of 1978, which identified certain merit principles as well as prohibited personnel actions, which management should not do.
So they're kind of the yin and yang. I mean, the different sides of the coin. Here's what should be the principles, and here's what shouldn't happen.
That's exactly right. The principles are, I would call them good management principles. Decisions should be based upon merit. People should be paid based upon what they do. Basically, the workforce should be used efficiently and effectively. We should not be making decisions based upon, that are discriminatory. These merit principles are that we should train and develop a workforce to best serve the American public. Those are sort of the good operating principles. And the personnel practices are things like, you know, avoiding selections and decisions based upon things like race, sex, religion, whatever in that regard, coercing political activity, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And I did put the link, if ever, like I said, if you're looking at and the listeners, too, are looking at U.S. Transparency, .com, then there's a link there. I put the, to be somewhat objective about that, I put a link, when it says U.S. Merit System Protection Board, I put a link to Wikipedia, which seemed to me to be a fairly accurate, short and accurate description of what we were just talking about with various links from there to other places. I'm looking to see if there's one with the where it links to the merit principles. That might even be right off the main page. I don't see the Wikipedia.
Well, as I said, they were codified in the 1978 Civil Service Reform Act. So they are, in fact, listed with that, and we should have them somewhere on our homepage also.
Yeah, let's see if let's test the user friendliness of your homepage here and see if something like that, I would think, would be.
Well, I have to say we're in the process of improving our homepage.
Okay. let's see if I'm looking at. I'm just running my hand across the top here. I think we might be able to pull something out here because I do want to point people to those principles. Instead of telling just what's prohibited, of course, you want to say, well, here's what we're shooting for. Board members, appeal process. I'm running my arrow across the very top of the homepage.
I see you.
Appeals process, MSPB precision studies, public affairs. Well, maybe as you're speaking, I can figure that out. But merits and the principles. Okay. Well, we can. Oh, wait a minute. Well, there's a link there on the homepage to the merits and principles survey.
It is here. And did you find them?
Well, I saw it. There's a link to the merits. The MSPB announces the 2010 merits. Principles survey.
Also, if you go down, and I'll have to go back because I just found it. If you go to the site index, it recognizes not the the best and easiest way to get there. You get an alphabetical listing of things, and you'll go down to merit system principles, and you'll find it there.
Alphabetical. Oh, which one did you go? You mean the
site?
Oh, site. Okay, so on the main page, on the left-hand column. Under quick links, there's a link there to site index.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And then we go down to M?
M, merit
principles. Good enough. And we click on that. And there we are, merits and principles. And this is only two pages. That's good.
and these are straight from the Civil Service Reform Act then. Section 2301.
Okay, there it is at the top. In the U.S. Code, merit system principle, blah, 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 so forth, and then it does it list the principles listed. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm looking for sub A, sub 2B.
It's under B, and then 1 through 9.
I see. Recruitment from qualified individuals. Fair and equitable treatment without regard to political affiliation, race, color, and all the other things involved there. Equal pay for equal work. Highest standards of integrity, conduct, and concern for the public interest should be used efficiently and effectively, which I guess relates to the whistleblowing part of it. That people
actually, that relates to a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean,
efficiently, effectively, but I mean the flip side, we were mentioning the prohibited things would be, for instance, the flip side of number 5 there on effectively.
That's not
firing people for pointing out ways to make the government work more efficiently and effectively.
That's right. You can also, under P in that site index, go to prohibited personnel practices.
Well, I did have that on my blog. I just didn't have the one for the. I neglected to put in a link directly to the principles. I did put the link there to prohibited personnel practices. So that's why I wanted to stop just for a second there and point out that that MSPB is looking for trying to achieve or at least point out. And what the whole thing about merit systems is all about, and that it's not against something, but it's actually shooting for principles.
That's right. The principles are, in a sense, the most important things. The prohibited personnel actions are the things that actions that can be taken that would violate those principles.
Mm-hmm.
And there are probably a lot of other things that would be inefficient or ineffective that we'd also want to avoid, but aren't necessarily laid out in the prohibitive personnel practices.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so just quickly running through these again, should be retained on the basis of their performance, should be provided education and training, employees should be protected against arbitrary action, personal favoritism, or coercion for partisan political purposes, and prohibited from using their influence or authority for interfering with elections, and employees should be protected against reprisal for the lawful disclosure of information which the employees reasonably believes evidences a violation of law, rule, or regulation, or here it is, yes, mismanagement, gross waste of funds, abuse of authority, et cetera. Bad stuff.
Correct.
That should be protected against. Yeah, so actually the prohibited part does get sneak in there as far as the principles go. But I'm, you know, so anyway, but and blah, blah, so forth, more legal stuff. But I'm glad you pointed that out because I did want to start off on the right foot here. It's not just about preventing stuff from happening, but encouraging better behavior.
Well, in fact, what we're after is a better government, a more effective management.
Yes, and you don't get there just from the lack of bad government.
That's right.
Prohibiting, exactly. We're trying to prohibit bad practices, and then good government will just naturally happen. Well, maybe, or maybe not. So, anyway, but going down, and we did go to, and so now that I've rattled those off, people can now compare those to the flip side, and if they have the link that I provided, which was prohibited personnel practices in that same paragraph that mentions your name.
That's right, and they're just more specific behaviors that we certainly want to avoid.
Mm-hmm. And where did that go? Oh, there they are. Yeah, and it's just kind of like the same kind of like promotions. Yes, and all not favoritism. And does, you know, yeah, definitions. So it does get into more detail. So anyway, but so I mentioned that there's a survey, I think when we were looking around on the homepage, that there's a government-wide survey that's done every 3 years.
Well, every 3 to 4 years. Depends upon our availability of resources. We try to do it every 3 or 4 years and then track a number of items, but also undertake other research objectives with those surveys. But in particular, the one upcoming is focusing more on prohibited personnel practices and whistleblowing than some of the more recent ones in the past.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did want to get to that one because that's the one I mentioned. I noticed just today and just added about it was in a press release today, but the one that's every 3 years is like the big.
Well, we're talking about the same survey. Occasionally do other surveys, but even when we do our survey every 3 or 4 years, the content isn't always exactly the same. So it depends upon since we really only have the resources and the wherewithal to do a big survey that often, we do repeat some items. Some items we come back from time to time on. And some items are new to any particular survey, basically fitting in with our goals of both tracking certain things as well as investigating new issues.
Okay, and I had put that was the next paragraph down that I was talking about. I have a link there for it. Involves a survey of federal employees that was last done in 2007.
That's correct. But what I'm saying is, for instance, the items that we'll be asking this year are not 100% in agreement with the ones we asked in 2007.
Oh, okay.
And 2007, we were focusing on, in particular, back in 2005, we had undertook a project to look at what we called employee engagement, which related to the extent to which employees were committed to doing their best possible efforts for their job. We're willing to divest their sort of discretionary effort to do an even better job. And we found in 2005 that there were positive outcomes the greater the percentage of the workforce that were willing to do that. And then in 2007, we attempted to investigate the behaviors that would foster that type of engagement. In 2010 now, we're going back to more of a more focused relook on prohibitive personnel practices as well as whistleblowing, which we had a few items on those previous surveys, but they weren't the main focus.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now you're going to, and I want to make sure that you don't get, I do want people to look at what we're talking about. So let's see if I provided a link here to, let's see, Survey of Federal Employees, okay, I just want to see, and that provides a link to the Merit Systems Survey of 2007. But
which,
is there one, can you bring us to where the engagement ones?
Well, actually, you have those already on your website there, Stephen. The Power Employee Engagement under number 9.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually... That's actually the report from some of the 2005
okay.
data.
I knew I put it somewhere, but I put it under the list. So if people scroll down to the handy links, the first few are about open government. And actually, I mean, because open government is about public engagement, then the idea of, internal engagement, the idea of internal collaboration, I mean, this is still in my way of thinking, and having worked inside and outside of government, is that if you have an internal regime that resembles North Korea, then you can't really expect people to reach out from North Korea and be engaging.
Well, that's certainly true. What I would say is, I said the number 9 point power of engagement really discusses our point of our report that describes what we believe engagement to be, how we measure it, and what its consequences are. You go down to number 10, managing for engagement, that's really the results of our 2007 survey, where we tried to identify the behaviors that would foster engagement, which are largely supervisory behaviors.
Okay, so between those two studies, then, it would give a pretty good idea about and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I read something that indicated that there's definitely a connection between those agencies. You broke it out by agency.
We did.
The agencies with higher engagement, whose employees felt they were being engaged?
Well, not felt they were engaged, actually behaved in a way that exhibited engagement. By that, were willing to invest a greater discretionary effort. They were more committed to an outcome. Now, there's a lot of research, for instance, in the private sector that says the higher the percentage of your workforce that you can get who are committed to doing whatever it takes to do a good job, the better your organization is. And what we attempted to show in 2000, with the 2005 data in 2008, that was also held true for the federal government. And for instance, what we found was that agencies that had higher percentages of their workforce engaged had certain things happening to them. For instance, they used less sick leave. They filed fewer discrimination complaints. They were less. They on average took less time off when they had injuries. They also did better on OMB scores of agency performance. So there were a number of consequences that could be linked to greater percentage of the workforce being engaged. Now, in saying that, we should recognize that most employees are not engaged or not fully engaged. That's true in the private sector and as well as the federal government. And that's part of our point also, is that if we can engage a higher percentage of our workforce, we probably can get better outcomes for our organizations.
Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of room for improvement.
That's what we're suggesting. Yes.
Mm-hmm. But there is definitely a correlation, and whether it sounds like you said whether it's in the government or any kind of organization, public, private, whatever, that this is a common thread.
It is a common thread. Well, the whole idea is if the person sees that that there's something in work for them, be it an opportunity for advancement, be it a furthering of personal goals, or being an attempt to reach personal goals that may be more societal in purpose. For instance, like if you're really a believer in environmental protection and you work for EPA, you may be willing to work harder than someone who has less of a believer.
Uh-huh.
So it's sort of fostering that personal engagement, we call it, where a person say, work is more than just getting paid. It's something it's important to me for other reasons.
Uh-huh. And I guess personal satisfaction that they're actually being used in a thoughtful, engaging way rather than just.
That's certainly part of it. But it's also, in many cases, an opportunity to further their own selves, too, in terms of developing and becoming, making better use of their skills and abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So that to the extent that you can, in a sense, offer something to the person that they believe in or want or desire, they're more likely to work hard to achieve it, to achieve your purposes.
Uh-huh.
And that's sort of the idea of engagement. And then in the next report, Managing for Engagement, we talked how supervisory behaviors can, in fact, foster or discourage engagement. In terms of how people are managed.
Well, they're the ones in charge of how things go down, so certainly, yes, the responsibility, that's what they get paid the bigger bucks for.
The somewhat bigger bucks, I'm afraid. But,
somewhat, relatively, yes. the relatively, yeah, but that's their job is to make it a place that people want to work at.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, as we discussed a little bit in that report, and more in a report will be coming out soon, is that we don't think that necessarily supervisors have always been selected and prepared for these sort of engagement roles. That you know, in an upcoming report, which again builds on the same themes, we're suggesting that you know we need to look at. Oftentimes, we put a lot of stress on who was the best technician in making a selection. And while technical skills are still important for supervisors, also ability to manage people is important. In some jobs, it may be the more important area, in others perhaps not. But we've not always done a good job of selecting for that. We've not always done a very good job of training people to do that. And in some cases, we haven't even allowed perhaps the time nor set the atmosphere for that encourages supervisors to do those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right. Well, that would be the idea that, yes, just because somebody's a really good baseball player and hits a lot of home runs doesn't mean they're the best coach.
That's right. And that's right.
Seems like always, sometimes, at least for using the same comparison, that baseball coaches were always kind of mediocre.
Players.
They have like a .243 batting average, but they make a great coach, you know. So, they're, yeah, so the idea. But yet we still think, oh, well, you know, the best person, the most productive person on the staff when they look around for somebody to replace the retiring boss, yet we still look at the highest performer and figure, we'll just put them in charge and then they'll just tell everybody else how to do it. It'll just rub off on other people. And, of course, you can't just rub up against somebody. And, you know, there are certain skills to leadership and coaching and so forth and so on that aren't necessarily the same as hitting home runs.
Well, that's right. And, you know, we have other problems, too, which is how do we, you know, if we don't select our best employees, do we demotivate them? You know, in other words, they also have ambitions. Maybe we need to have ways to pay people other than just moving them up to the supervisory chain.
Right, especially if the top performer is a jerk. And everybody on the staff knows that he's a jerk, and he gets promoted, and they go, "Well, see, it doesn't matter if I, you know, took that course in quality management, or you know, got my degree and master's. As long, you know, here's somebody who's the best performer, but everybody rubs everybody the wrong way."
That's right. It's also an assessment issue in some cases. It's easy to identify who was the best performer, perhaps. It's oftentimes more difficult to identify who's going to be the best manager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't necessarily have good tools to do that, or we don't necessarily employ the tools that are available.
Okay. So you were saying that that's something, and we started talking about this because you tell me you were starting to look at that or going to do a study?
Well, we're releasing a study in probably next month, 6 weeks, that really builds upon the two previous ones I talked about that identifies the issues of employee selection and training and development in order to have a supervisory workforce that we believe would be more attuned to managing in a way that would foster engagement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So those previous two that we had pointed out here, links number 9 and 10, were previous studies, and now you're digging a little deeper to find
That's
out
correct.
Those things that, for those practices, I guess, that actually contribute to that engagement.
That's correct. That's right.
Okay. Good. Well, I look forward to that coming out then, because that's what people, you know, how to do it. People are like, yeah, engagement, you know, yeah, collaboration, the same thing going on with open government. Everybody's in favor of, you know, transparency, participation, and collaboration, engagement. It's kind of like, okay, fine, how do you do it?
But you're right. It's sometimes easier said than done. But that's what we're trying to do is, you know, build upon our research. You can't tackle every problem all at once. And we're attempting to, you know, build sort of a program of work of study that's, you know, looking at what issues that we think are critical for the government.
Uh-huh. Well, and I'm curious, though, since you guys are actually coming up, and like I said, it's been a real quandary for a lot of federal agencies, you know, how to do it. In fact, I did put another link there, which is the link number 8 is the Open Government Plan.
Mm-hmm.
of MSPB and all other federal agencies have come up with an open government plan that's supposed to turn the rhetoric and the lofty, you know, rhetoric and so forth and policy into practice. So have your studies been getting any attention from the open government crowd? I'm assuming,
The studies
as
have all.
As an open government person, have you been involved with the open government plan?
Only a little bit. Our studies have always been out there, and we would like them to be seen, publicized, and discussed more. That's why we're willing to come on programs like this and do other outreach efforts to try to communicate what we've been researching over the years. So we're very much in favor of trying to share information and really engage in more of a public dialogue about these issues. It's just sometimes hard to do.
It's called marketing.
That's right. And we're not necessarily the best at that. We're trying to learn and get better. It's sort of what, we're more researchers than we are marketers.
Yeah.
But we need some of the marketing, too, I think.
Yeah. Well, part of it is, and this is an observation on my part with the open government thing, is that a lot of the people who are involved in open government are relatively new to this area of participation, collaboration, engagement, they're relatively young, let's say that. And as we were both at one time, we can remember back, we got all excited about
barely.
And everything. And then the old people tried to tell us, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's like this. And we went, yeah, that's old people stuff. And you like to think that everything's so new. And so a lot of them see this, they think this is a whole new, unexplored area. And the hard part is explaining to the younger people that it's not. That people have been doing studies on this type of thing for a while, and so they don't need to reinvent the wheel. They don't need, so that's the hard part is explaining to them that even if you have the perfect study that explains how employee engagement is related to open government, which is related to better government, and it's still hard for them to believe that somebody's been looking into this for years and years and years because they want to think it's all new. And there are certain aspects, like the technology and so forth, that allows us to do things on the Internet like we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have been able to do this 10 years ago because Internet radio wasn't around then, as far as I know. And certainly those technological things can help. But by and large, working in an organization, like we were talking about, using the baseball analogy and this and that, who have historically, the fact that certain people get promoted without regard to whether they're the best choice. And you were mentioning going all the way back to President Garfield getting shot because somebody was disgruntled. I mean, to put it mildly. But, a disgruntled office seeker, I think that's probably the word they use when they talk about the assassin. He thought he was entitled to something or another, something came out of this, but this has been going on for centuries, if not millennia, about who's entitled to what.
It's also not unique to our government. I think it's governments everywhere to a greater or lesser degree.
Mm-hmm. Although I would like to think that we have stronger merit principles in action than, say, Iraq.
We certainly would hope so. And we do find, for instance, that other governments come and look at what we're doing because they do hold us up to a potential model.
And as a matter of fact, I mean, just touching on that very briefly, I don't want to get bogged down in Iraq, literally or figuratively, or Afghanistan, but I hear things on the news about how corruption, government corruption in Iraq and Afghanistan are pretty, I've listened to National Public Radio, so they're fairly objective, but have there been people from Iraq or Afghanistan that have talked with you guys?
I cannot say that to be the case.
No?
We have had, however, people like from groups from the People's Republic of China, for instance, who have come over and asked for presentations about, you know, how the system works here, as well as Thailand, Taiwan, Japan. Some other but former Eastern European countries also. So we've actually had quite a number of countries over time come over and sort of, you know, want to see what we're doing and how we're doing it and why we're doing it.
So as, not that you should know, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but as far as you're not aware of merit principles in the Iraq?
Well, that's beyond the area of anything I would know about.
Okay. No, I'm just saying, I'm not expecting you to. Certainly, if people come and ask you for help, you know, that's understandable, but so... you don't want to do. You're busy surveying the federal government without surveying the world.
That's right. We do in terms of sort of outreach, try to, you know, be again open about what we're doing. Just as we want to be open in, within government to the United States and the public, we also want to be open to other countries.
Okay. And I just want to stop here for a second, just to remind people if they're listening on the radio, like this is Open Government Radio. It's found at ustransparency.com. I'm Steve Buckley, your host, and with me today is Dr. John Crum from the Merit Systems Protection Board, the Office of Policy. I'll make sure I get this right. Policy and Evaluation?
That's
or Evaluation
right.
And Policy.
Policy and Evaluation.
Okay, great. And we're talking about... The relationship between the principles of open government, which are transparency, participation, and collaboration, and how that is the culture change that is necessary in order for those values to be reached or improved upon, and the work that the Merit System Protection Board has been doing as far as surveys and studies about the federal workplace, meaning all the various places. A lot of people think of the federal government as one big, giant box, and they don't realize that there's dozens, well, certainly thousands of workplaces.
Probably more.
Certainly, there's dozens of federal agencies, and within them, there are, you know, you might have one program or program office within an agency that's has a different culture than the one floor up or two floors down. It can vary, and I worked at five federal agencies, so I can tell you that they're, yes, all people are alike in many ways, but all people are different in many ways, and so many different agencies have different personalities, at least that's what I found, and working with, and I worked, my job allowed me to talk with people in other agencies, so I could get a gist of what was going on in other agencies, and it was just like people. You know, goes for the atmosphere in different offices are different from place to place, although you would hope that a particular agency would at least be a little bit more consistent, let's say, throughout its various offices. So is that something that... that you found?
Absolutely. Agencies and organizations within our agencies can vary dramatically. Now, in some cases, that's a product of management. Some cases, it's a product of mission. For instance, oftentimes having a very focused and clear-cut mission, it helps people get in line with that organization. When the missions are diffuse and not well understood, it's more difficult for people to understand what their role should be in many cases. So it could be management, it could be mission. It can also be the type of the workforce they have. For instance, one of the organizations that usually comes up on top in many ways would be somebody like NASA, who happens to have a very focused mission, who attracts people who want to do certain things, and maybe the only place where they can be able to do those things. If you want to put a man on Mars, where else do you go to work? If you want to be on the cutting edge of, you know, space science, that's where you go. Similarly, like the National Institutes of Health, if you're a medical researcher, that's sort of the top of the pyramid for you. So they have advantages over some other organizations who do much more mundane work. And it's oftentimes more difficult to have, sort of an engaged workforce in those agencies. Doesn't mean that's impossible and doesn't mean it can't be improved. It's just that some agencies start at different places than others. And additionally, agencies can be managed differently, which also can have an effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did have the NASA gentleman, get his name, who helped come up with the open government plan for NASA on the show a couple of months ago, and we were seeing that the it was back in April. We were looking at the open government plans, and they had been rated by OMB or self-evaluated or so forth and so on. But anyway, and also an outside group had rated them mm-hmm. too, as far as implementation and so forth. And it seemed the ones there were the three or four that had the best that seemed to come out on top as far as the report card goes. I think it was NASA, EPA, DOT, and I know I'm leaving off one. But anyway, the common thread seemed to be, like you were saying, if there's a clear mission, a very public mission, because if something...
That's right.
If it involves building bridges and the bridge falls down, then everybody sees that. It's like, oh, but at the same time, if the agency has a high percentage of scientists and engineers, then of course, they have also been trained to go where the truth is. So, if this is, if there's something that's going to prevent the rocket ship, the Challenger from blowing up, or the bridge from falling down, then they go to that answer, regardless of whether it's politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we were looking at the BP oil spill, and you could see that. Well, there's certainly a lot of scientists and engineers involved in oil extraction and so forth and so on. But I guess we'll find out perhaps in 6 months when they come out with the spill. We'll see if the non-scientific, non-engineers, the political stuff somehow maybe played a role, which we all suspect may have, but I don't think we'll be shocked and surprised to find out that politics intruded into things that were better left to scientists and engineers, so to speak. But that's my take. And full disclosure, I'm an engineer. So I do see a thread there, and maybe we can, bump up the stock of scientists and engineers a little bit in that respect. So I'm doing that in, like I said, full disclosure. I think that we as a group are underrated, and so maybe if they can point that out, to just go where the truth is, and the idea of, I would think that anybody who would like to work for an organization that just wants to, people can know what's going on, and they're not wondering, why did he get that job, or why is this happening, or, and rumors start to fly, and which is all natural. It happens to almost any type of organization, even in a family, where, but the more open that everyone can be about what's going on and who's doing what and why did somebody get an extra cookie and I didn't, then the bad feelings won't fester and you won't go off and shoot the president like, poor President Garfield. So, anyway, went off on a little tangent there, but just trying to put this in the sense that this shouldn't be looked upon as boring government studies. I think there's gold in the work and the studies and the reports that the MSPB has done, and it needs to be taken advantage of since we've paid for it, right?
Indeed,
we've all paid for, so we might as well use it. And the hard part will be explaining to people that there's gold in them Czar Hills, as far as in their studies.
Well, I actually think if we can reach them, even with the information, oftentimes they see the value too, and it's oftentimes an issue of reaching people.
Yeah. It's a matter of, I think, like I said earlier, that a lot of young people who go off to these open government conferences and they're all excited about technology because we all, that's a natural tendency, I think, at any age to think, oh, all I need to do is buy the right tool and that'll fix stuff. And like, well, you know, like we're using the baseball analogy, all I need is a better bat and I'll hit more home runs. Well, it couldn't hurt, but maybe you need to take more batting practice. There was one thing I wanted to point out here. As I said, I noticed today that on the homepage that there was a press release, and it's just basically what we've been talking about earlier, but the idea that this is link number 12.
Correct.
And actually number 13, but it's related to that. But 12 talks about the fact that you've done some studies, and this I plucked something out of the press release here talking about and I emphasized in bold here some things. MSPB's reexamination of prohibited personnel practices will give particular attention to whistleblower retaliation. Upcoming studies will investigate what the law requires an employee to be considered a whistleblower, an examination of the whistleblower process, barriers to reporting, you know, wrongdoing. I mean, this is a term that comes up, barriers to open government. So these are all, I mean, and someone doesn't have to point out the term waste, fraud, and abuse. I think people think of whistleblowers as pointing out waste, fraud, and abuse, like people, sometimes it can be pretty mundane. It's not, a waste doesn't necessarily mean pouring money out the window or down a rat hole, or throwing away perfectly good equipment or something like that. Sometimes waste is simply the flip side of efficiency. Inefficiency is waste. That's just the same thing. And no government agency is perfectly efficient, as we all know. So that the search for more efficiency certainly means having to point out the fact that maybe there's a better way. Maybe we can be more efficient and less inefficient. It's just two ways of saying the same thing. And so if somebody points out the possibility, simply by pointing out the possibility that maybe the agency can do a better job and be more effective and efficient by using, let's say, you know, Blog Talk Radio, mm-hmm. or some type of social media or government 2.0 technology or whatever, you know, how to engage the public better. If they point that out, and if it comes back that the boss didn't think it was a good idea or something or another, and it turns out that somebody else got the job because Bill was making suggestions about transparency and collaboration and engagement, and the boss didn't like it, then would actually be, as I understand it, prohibited?
Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
And that's part of the whistleblowing is actually a very complex issue. To get protection as a whistleblower, there are certain thresholds that need to be met. That's right.
Okay, I was remembering that. It says gross waste.
For instance, it may be a hard time pointing out that that you weren't using all technologies was a gross waste. I don't know. Again, I'm not an expert in that area.
And I remember that gross waste. Somebody told me one time they thought gross waste was a certain dollar amount.
I don't think it has the exact dollar amount associated with it, but it has to reach some sort of legal threshold that has been, defined, at least understood by the courts. Likewise, a clear and imminent danger would have to be something that would be imminent or have such scope of potential impact. That, you know, people's lives were threatening, for instance. Not just any disclosure about, what people thought was being done wrong would technically be considered whistleblowing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the best person to, define where those cutoffs are.
Okay.
But
the idea. And that could be another whole, I'm sure we could do another whole show on that and have somebody come in and explain the finer points. But I guess that would be the thing is if I was a, 20 or 30-something year old federal employee and I'm thinking about making some suggestions about, you know, well, it seems like my agency's trying to engage me and I have some ideas, then I might be a little reluctant to point those out if I was like, well, what if this comes back? And I guess these are some of the questions that we're that you're going to delve more into.
And that's in fact correct. We're going to try to find out whether people are reluctant to, you know, discuss issues and where that reluctance stems from. Is a fear of retaliation. We also are going to ask people who believe they have reported things what their experiences have been. Do they believe they were retaliated against, and in what ways? What were the sort of things that they reported? What were the outcomes?
And I think I did. I was briefly going through this, the report that under number 12, there's a link to the press release mm-hmm. that I put there, but then there's a link to the actual study that just came out, and I. Was it there something in that trended that it was that whistleblower retaliation?
Had gone down
and then it went back up, or it's not.
Well, it was going down and more maybe went up slightly. I would say at least leveled out. The issue of greater concern is, I think, that when we trended out, of course, since 2000-2005, we roughly 6% of the people felt that they've made sort of a formal disclosure of about waste, fraud, or abuse, or unlawful behavior. The point that causes us some concern is about the same percentage of people say they've been retaliated against this. Does that mean that if you have reported this, you have a high chance of retaliation? We don't know because we have these surveys didn't allow us to match up those answers. We will be able to, in the forthcoming survey, again, find out about an individual's perceived experience in the case of what they did, why they did it, and what the outcomes were. So it gives us a little more direct focus on what was happening from the perspective of that employee.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, you said 6% was, I mean, you...
6% said they reported something.
But you do... Now, for instance, I mean, you do a sampling throughout?
That's correct.
A statistical sampling?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
In the upcoming survey, for instance, we're going to about 80,000 people at about 25 agencies. In many cases, also to components of those agencies. As we mentioned before, we do find large differences by agencies and sometimes by agency subcomponents.
I'm sorry. Before I forget, though, so is it broken? Do the results in the studies, like the engagement studies, do you break them out by agency?
We do that, and where we can. Now we don't necessarily have every agency. Again, we're also growing in our capacity to do these surveys, so that some of our early surveys had much smaller numbers, and therefore we're not necessarily. Representative of every, dependent upon the size of the agency, dependent upon maybe only available at the agency level. And subsequent surveys, because we're able, by using the survey as online surveys, we can, in a cost-effective way, get to more people. We've increased our sample size somewhat. We still try to keep it parsimonious in the sense that we don't want to oversample people. But it will give us the ability to go down to agency, in some cases, sub-agency levels. To look for differences.
So if, for instance, if, say, someone from the White House thought that what you were doing was particularly relevant to the Open Government Directive and culture change in that respect, and they said this is exactly the type of things we need to do in order to figure out whether we're having an effect, you know, whether the culture is actually changing or we're just fooling ourselves, then does you get funded? How do you get your fund? I mean, how can they make you? How can they help you do that, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Certainly, we believe we're operating more or less on a shoestring, as I'm sure other agencies do too. We're a very small agency, and we have a relatively small, actually a very small research arm here. Right now, we're only 13 people, and we do a lot of different projects. These are costly endeavors for us, and so that's one of the reasons we only do them every 3 or 4 years. Additionally, we don't want to burn out employees by asking things too often or running too many surveys. So yes, we could we do more if we had more, of course. But we're trying to use the resources we have as effectively as we can to try to get some idea about what is going on with these issues.
So other than giving you encouragement of a verbal sense, does the way the funding works, though, does MSPB get their funding? How might you work on more than a shoestring, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
We have to.
Are they allowed by law to give you something, or is merit system?
Of course they could.
No, we
are funded through both, through OMB and through Congress, as our other agencies. If we can make the case that we need more money to do something, and they believe that case is well made, they could indeed provide us with more. Of course, we are in an era of high budget deficits, and competition for dollars is high. So that's a difficult proposition, but we believe what we do is important, and we're going to be trying to make it the best case we can to try to do more, to maybe get a little bit more to do a little more.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly the idea is that with I just saw a GAO report just came across. I was going through my email earlier today that the Government Accounting Office was saying that OMB needed to come up with do a better job of performance measurement, and there is no one indicator of performance measurement. It's kind of like your health. You go to the doctor's, and he measures all these different things, or she measures all these different things, and tries to make sense about how you're feeling. I mean, of course, you can tell them, but you might have something wrong that you didn't know was wrong, and that's why they run all the tests.
Put it all together,
and they get a good picture. So these are certainly, I think, things that you're doing are certainly indicators that tell whether or not an organization is healthy, has a healthy culture that makes its employees or elicits the type of participation by the employees where employees want to work there and feel satisfied and glad that they work there. So, which is where we're all shooting for, that type of environment. So, and I'm assuming. Well, now that we're on the air, you can MSPB, is that a good place to work?
MSPB is a fabulous place to work. We have people we have the advantage of a clear mission, as I mentioned before, and we have the advantage of having a very educated and motivated workforce. We have here in my office the opportunity to do things, work on issues from a bipartisan perspective, something that's fairly unique in government. And so it's, I think, easy to both get good people and motivate them to do a good job.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show today, John. And I guess it's time to let's see how much time we have here.
Can I say one thing, Stephen?
Oh, sure. Okay, go ahead. I won't wrap up. I'm just looking at my
I just want to mention one thing, which is that we are looking for comments on our research agenda. We're going to be doing a new one over the next few years, and we're right now looking for comments and ideas that people have of things we should be looking at, and they can go on our website and thereby provide us with any information they might have about what they think we should be working on.
And as I'm glad you pointed that out, because and the lady was going to be coming on in a second here telling me we're running out of time in a couple of minutes. But anyway, I pointed out, 90 seconds, there we go. Okay, on the blog at U.S. Transparency, write a couple paragraphs after I mention your work. There's something there where I said, the paragraph begins, don't want to wait 3 years for the next merit principal survey. There's a link there. Here's your chance to ask MSPB to look more closely at Open Government Culture Change. Open Government Culture Change. So
right.
There's a link there to that survey. And anybody, is that any federal employees?
Federal employees, but really anyone.
Okay.
We're not guaranteeing that we can undertake everything people ask us to do, but we're certainly going to consider their ideas and try to come up with the best agenda that we can.
Okay. Well, here it is. That's the link there if you want to give Merit System Protection Board, John Crum's office, encouragement to continue looking into culture change-related things there. Then go ahead and fill out the survey. And I appreciate you giving us your time today, John, to talk about the important work you're doing. I think it's very been going under the radar as far as open government goes. I'm Steve Buckley, and this has been Open Government Radio. Thanks again, John, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye, everybody.